This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, good afternoon. It's lovely to see you all here in the Zendo. This weekend is, of course, our traditional annual remembrance of our founding teacher, Kōpin Shinō Odagawa Roshi. And this time in particular, our Ino and I have set aside for remembering Kōpin. So I'm not going to give a formal talk, but I'll talk a little bit about my experiences with Kōpin. And then I'm hoping others might share their experiences. It's now 21 years since Kōpin passed away, I think. There's fewer and fewer of his students coming to Jikoji. I think that's okay. He would want new students to be coming. He would want the Sangha to keep growing. But still, perhaps it's nice for those of us who practice with him to say a little about what that was like. I didn't meet Kōpin here. I met Kōpin at his other American temple, Hokoji, in Taos. This was in the 90s. He had already been teaching for a long time. He came to this country in, I can't even remember, the 60s anyways, 63 maybe. So he'd been here a long time. And at that point, he was a little reluctant to take more students. It often felt like he was actually actively avoiding taking on any more students. So you had to sort of seek him out. I had been living at the San Francisco Zen Center for about a year, and I very much wanted to be ordained as a priest. But there was something about the structure at the San Francisco Zen Center that didn't quite resonate for me. There were a lot of rules and forms that the priests were supposed to follow that somehow didn't feel natural to me. And so I was a little bit at a loss of how to become ordained and trained as a priest. And I had these two friends, Gunther and Kōsho. Gunther was German, and he had practiced in this temple in Austria called Pureg, that one of Kōpin's disciples, Vanya, had started. And so he had gotten to know Kōpin quite well. And so when Gunther heard about my frustration trying to find a teacher to ordain me, he said, "Oh, you should talk to Kōpin. He'll ordain anyone." And that wasn't quite true. As I said, Kōpin actually seemed to be trying to avoid taking on students, but I wrote to him, you know, a letter. In those days, just wrote letters to people. I don't think maybe he answered the first letter, but he did eventually answer, saying that I should come see him in Taos if I was interested in becoming ordained with him. And so I drove to Taos and spent several days with him, and in the end he did agree to ordain me. But as is the tradition in Zen, my robes, this okesa that you see, not this one, a black one that you sew when you're first ordained. And so he asked somebody to measure the material and give me the material, and I went off to sew these robes. And that actually, I had no experience sewing and didn't know what I was doing. I eventually found a sewing teacher who would help me. But anyways, it took a couple of years for me to sew these robes. And Koban was moving around in those days, but by the time I was done and ready to be ordained, he was back living in the Bay Area, living near Santa Cruz. And so I wrote to him to say that I had finished sewing and was ready to be ordained. And he didn't answer that letter. And maybe a month later, I wrote to him again. I finished sewing, was ready to be ordained. And he didn't answer that letter. And then maybe a couple months after that, I wrote to him saying, I finished sewing, I was ready to be ordained, and I was going to come to his house to talk to him about this on a certain date, because I didn't know how else to connect with him. And all I had was his address. I didn't know actually where this house was. And I couldn't find it on any map that I had. But on that date, I drove into Santa Cruz to the bookstore, bought a better map, found the street where his house was, drove to his house. And I was just as I was arriving at his house at the time that I said I would meet him, I saw him and his family driving away. So I think I left a note saying, sorry, I missed you. leaving my phone number and saying, you know, I would like to talk about when I would be ordained. And maybe a week after that, his wife called me and said, okay, now Koban is ready to talk to you about your ordination and to come back to the house at a certain time. Very happy I came back. And he was very kind. And he walked through what the ordination ceremony would be like. Many of you witnessed one here this morning. He said we would do it here at Jikoji. We chose a date. And he said, and I guess this is something he had also said when I first met him, but he repeated it, that he was happy to ordain me and help me to become a priest, but that my training was my own responsibility. He would ordain me, but I had to train myself. On the day that we chose, I came here to Jikoji. Those two friends who had first introduced me to Koban, Gunchen Kosho, came as well. It just so happened that my father was in town, so he came to my ordination. And we were all, we got the Zendo already, but there was no Koban. We were all getting nervous what would happen. But eventually he did come. I think he was maybe 3 hours late. and we had the service right here, this half of the Zendo. Koban was there with his wife, I think two kids at the time, little tiny ones, toddlers. And it was really a beautiful ceremony. Although Koban was very informal and didn't really advocate having complicated forms and ceremonies, he knew all the ceremonies from Japan, all the forms. And when he was doing a ceremony himself, he sort of couldn't help but do everything exactly right. And so there's something really beautiful about watching him do all the bows and the handing over of the robes and shaving my head. He just had a real elegance to him. And so he ordained me, and I started practicing with him as much as I could. He, again, was not teaching a lot in those days, but he would lead sesshins here now and then. And so whenever he was, I would sit with him and do dokusan with him. But true to his word, he never really seemed to want to tell me anything. I would go to dokusan and he would just listen to what I had to say and maybe nod a little. But he really did seem to want me to figure out this business of being a priest on my own. And finally, I remember I was a little frustrated. I couldn't believe that he really didn't want to teach me anything. And so at one of these dokusan meetings, I just asked him directly, you know, is there something that I should be doing now that I'm a priest? Is there something you'd like me to do or something I should do differently? You know, what should I do next? And he seemed to take this question seriously, and he seemed to think about it for a long time. And this was in the middle of a sesshin, a little like this, I think a longer one, maybe it was a 5-day.
This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.